Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock on Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I would like to call the Ponce Inlet Town Council to order. I would ask that everybody please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present in council chambers. To begin, I do wish to once again comment on the time of our meeting. This earlier meeting is the third of four regularly scheduled meetings at 2 o'clock rather than at 6 o'clock on a trial basis, and we will all have the opportunity of assessing this change at our May council meeting. Please remember to complete a citizen participation request form if you wish to speak on an item that is not on our agenda and provide it to our town clerk. Item number four, are there any additions, corrections, or deletions to the April 18th, 2024 agenda? Mike?
Yeah, we do have one. It's a request from FPL to move their ordinance. It's 2024-02 up to item 8B. Their attorney has to leave after a certain period of time, so they wanted to go ahead and get that done, and it should be quick.
Thank you, Mike. This is to move item 11A, FPL's, to 8B. Uh-huh. Does anyone have any other additions, corrections, or deletions? Then I move to adopt the agenda as modified to move item 11A to 8B and items 11B, C, and D become items A, B, and C, respectively.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as modified. Okay. Bear with me. Where's my agenda? Please bear with me for one moment. There's my agenda. Okay. We are now ready for citizen participation. I have three members of the public who wish to speak. I ask that you come up here and place your name and address on the record. First is Scott Brevey.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Brevey. I live at 37 Jana Drive. I have two issues that I'd like to speak about today. I know the town encourages people to report other residents that don't get building permits, and it seems that there's some residents that maliciously report people, even though it's posted on their doors that they have a permit. Everybody knows that it's common knowledge. So my question to you is there any repercussions? Is there anything in the ordinance that can prohibit this or stop people from doing this so we're not wasting the town's time and harassing law-abiding citizens? So that's one of the things maybe you guys can discuss and get back to me on, or we can talk about it at the next meeting.
Yes.
I don't know if you have
We will have some form of communication back to you. That's a very direct question. Okay, thank you, Scott.
Okay, so the second thing is, I'm sure everybody in here knows what happened to the community center Facebook page and website, how it was, again, maliciously taken down. And if, in fact, that the town definitively finds out who this person is, that they are they going to take the stand that they're going to deem this person as not in good standing with the town and prohibit them from doing business in the town? Because what they did was pretty egregious, and I'm sure everybody can agree on that. So those are the two things that I want to address today.
Scott, I'm sure I'm not the only one who wrote that down, and we are going to communicate back with you on that and see anything further that needs to be done. Thank you.
Okay, thank you,
Scott. I have here a representative of the Board of Trustees for PICKEY, either or both, Kim Canny and Mark Obeck.
Good
Good afternoon, Council. Unfortunately, Kim got tied up, so you're stuck with me. Little update. First, let me start by saying the town of Ponson that has entrusted the Board of Trustees of the Community Center to oversee and operate the center in the best interests of our town. On the afternoon of April 10th, because of a malicious act, our Facebook page with years of content, including posts and pictures, were deleted. So why is that a big deal? We rely heavily on leads coming from our Facebook page for prospective rental contracts and engagements. As a result, we anticipate a significant loss of revenue. As you know, our revenue is used to offset operational expenses the town would incur to operate the center. Additionally, with over 1,000 followers that had been following the old Facebook account that's no longer in existence, we know that a portion of those relied on our Facebook for public safety information, which the town pushes to that web Facebook page. Creating a new Facebook page to contain most of the content from our original page, especially about rentals, will probably take, we estimate, about 100 hours of effort at a cost of approximately $5,000, equivalent to up to 10 rental proceeds. We had just earmarked about that amount for having the inside of the center completely repainted. Again, not at a cost to the town. We have created a new Facebook page entitled The Ponce Inlet Community Center. We have submitted an incident report to the police department and are confident that with their tools and working with Facebook, they will be able to identify the person or persons responsible for this malicious act. That's a formal statement from the Board of Trustees. Just some personal comments. Our Board of Trustees, as you know, are all volunteers. They're business owners, executives, full-time mothers, full-time employees elsewhere, and retirees like myself. We give of our time to help make this town better. We don't need this crap. None of us. Maybe you didn't know, but every voting resident of Ponce Inlet is an actual member of the community center. So this attack was not just on something that exists in the technological world of internet, not just on the trustees, but an attack on every town resident and indeed this town. I believe in karma. I also believe, whenever possible, people do not harm, the people that do harm need to be held accountable for their actions. This action was taken, might not rise to the level of a crime, but it is criminal. So I ask that an example be set. You hurt our town, and you will face the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And now, I can't read this well. It could be Mike Lonchar, L-O-N-C-H-A-R. Okay. He stepped out for a moment. I have another one. Jer Kessler.
Jer Kessler, 81 Bushman Drive. I just wanted to inform you and the citizens of the town that we are starting our farmers market this coming Sunday. It will be located in the parking lot of North Turn, and it will be open from 8 to 12. And I hope very much that you, the town council, and the citizens will be joining us there. Thank you.
Thank you. Has he come back? He's walking in. Okay, that's fine. We can certainly wait a moment. Okay. Here he comes. Hi. It's okay.
Hello, Madam Mayor and esteemed council folks. My name is Mickey Lonchar, 4590 South Atlantic, Unit 144 here in Ponce Inlet. And I just have really a question. I know that sometimes the county and the town don't really communicate that well with each other sometimes. And I live right across the street from Winter Haven Park, where if you'll think back to earlier in the year, there was sort of this misguided food truck thing that the county tried to put in there. Didn't go anywhere. I mean, nobody was using this thing. So it went away, and we figured, that's it. It's gone. Well, we noticed now that they've poured a concrete pad in the spot where the truck was set up last year. And I just wondered if they had, in their infinite wisdom, consulted the town or let somebody here know what was going on. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have someone from the county here. He is either writing it down to get the information for us, or he'll be able to respond to that. Okay, if there's no more citizen participation sheets, so I'm... Oh, if you would... You can come on up, please, and put your name and address on the record.
Doris Hines, 4621 South Atlantic Avenue. I just saw on Facebook, and it deals with the county, the plan to dredge and deposit sand. I wondered if there was going to be any discussion on that today, or if the county was prepared.
The county is prepared.
Okay,
he's right there. He will. Thank you so much, Doris. Okay, we will close citizen participation now. And now proclamations, presentations, and awards. Now, what I'd like to tell you is we do have 7 proclamations that will be presented in the months of April and May, and copies of all can be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. We have prepared the following proclamations for Arbor Day, Municipal Clerks Week, Building Safety Month, Police Officers Week, and Peace Officers Memorial Day, Public Works Week, EMS Week, and National Safe Boating Week. And I'm very pleased to let you know that we do have a representative here to receive our National Safe Boating Week. And I will introduce him just as soon as I read the proclamation for everybody to hear. So, this is a proclamation of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, whereas for over 100 million Americans, boating continues to be a popular recreational activity. And whereas, on average, 650 people die each year in boating-related accidents in the U.S., and whereas 75% of these are fatalities caused by drowning, and whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by the boat, equipment, or environmental factors, whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today had they worn their life jackets. Therefore, I, Lois A. Peritsky, Mayor of the Town of Ponce Inlet, do hereby support the goals of the Safe Boating Campaign and proclaim May 18th to May 24th, 2024 as National Safe Boating Week and the start of the year-round effort to promote safe boating in the Town of Ponce Inlet. I urge all those who boat to practice safe boating habits and wear a life jacket at all times while boating. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and cause the seal of the Town of Ponce Inlet to be affixed this 18th day of April, 2024. And now I'm very proud to introduce Commander Gary Kessler, Commander of the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, 7th District, Flotilla 44, and I ask him to please meet me at the podium. you, Commander, for coming here today.
Thank you for the proclamation.
We're very honored to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for all that you do. And we're going to have you. Where would you like us?
Yeah, right here.
And I'm very happy to acknowledge that we have our county council member, District 2, Matt Reinhardt, with us today. We're so appreciative he takes the time to come, listen to our concerns, and he would like to share some information with you today. Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Council members, I appreciate the opportunity. First off, with respect to the concrete slab that the gentleman brought up, I've already sent a text to Ben Bartlett, our public works, to try to figure out, because this is the first I'm hearing about it, so I left you my card. I apologize. But I want to make sure we get the answer for him as soon as possible. So I was unaware of that. So
thank you so much.
At the request, first, a couple things, if you'll indulge me. I have a few things to give you an update on, all of which to me is good news. With respect to the question about the dredging project, there are two current dredging projects that will be underway very soon. The first of which is the dredging of the entire intercoastal waterway, which is going to produce about 775,000 cubic yards of beach-compatible sand that will be put here in Ponce Inlet, staged to for sand placement in the most vulnerable areas of Ponce Inlet and Daytona Beach Shores, which, as everyone's aware, was dramatically hit as a result of the two hurricanes that we suffer from. So that being said, there's also another 550,000 cubic yards that would be dredged in a place called Rattlesnake Island near the inlet. That sand placement will be taken down to the New Smyrna Beach area because they sustained some damage as well. Will this accommodate all the sand that is needed? Probably not, but it's a good start. And some other good news with respect to that, a while back when the storms first hit, I had asked for a resolution or a postponement, if you will, of the DEP requirement of placing sand 4 foot high, 12 foot out from any seawall. People were already sustaining an enormous cost associated with the repair of their property. That gave them 2 years. That will sunset in 2025. I recently asked at another council meeting for support of the suspension of that altogether. However, there were some issues with respect to environmentalists saying that that sand will be needed. They agreed with the postponement, but we didn't know if we would get the success of having it terminated altogether. However, I learned today that with the easement project that we did with the 50 easements being signed, that those properties would not have to worry about the sand placement that I referred to, so which is good news for them. But we'll look at the others later down the road. Maybe I can get the support. We'll see. Another thing at the request of the town with respect to some signage to be placed at walkways 1, 2, and 3, the intersections of walkways 3 and 4 and the right turn onto the Jetty Park entrance. Those signs were placed at the request of the town in collaboration with George Rechtenwald, our county manager, and Ben Bartlett, our public works director. So those are in place, which I hope that everybody's happy with that. I know there are a few that are not, some of my bike riders, but I just learned about this issue yesterday as well. With respect, going back to, if I could, to the sand placement and the dredging projects. The Army Corps of Engineers first has to submit or has to investigate whether or not there will be an issue with what they call no significant impact. They have produced that letter of support for the dredging project. However, it has to wait for 30 days. That was signed on April 9th, so 30 days from the date of April 9th. I don't anticipate any problem with that going forward, so we should be on target for the summer for the placement of that, and hopefully we can prepare better for our storms that are coming up. Another thing that was significant, which I thought was good news, on April 5th, at the request of Volusia County, in collaboration and coordination with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Commission, as well as the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, as well as Florida Department of Environmental Protection, all those agencies, we had asked for another extension of allowance of construction past the May 1st deadline. That has been granted. So those individuals that have permits through FDEP to complete their seawalls and their revetment projects will be able to continue to do so. The same rules will apply. If one of our friendly sea turtles is seen there, of course, those areas will be roped off. Remember, originally they said if you saw them there last year, if you saw them there, the whole project would stop. Well, they're saying no. A 20-foot or radius around the sea turtle could be roped off, giving the turtle a chance to lay its eggs, so to speak, and for the project to continue, because any delay as we get closer to hurricane season is not good. So I was glad to hear that, and I was glad to hear that we had success in that endeavor. I had a lot of other notes with respect to the requirements for that. I'm not going to go into all that. I know that there was, I'll hit on one topic real quick. I know there was a question brought up about the opening of the South Beach Gate. We have come to find out that is not going to happen. That's been closed for 20 years, and we have no desire to open that back up. And they would actually, they would have received a lot of opposition from me.
Yes, sir.
There's also a lot of communication about the opening of beach driving. I will tell you, I am not in favor of that. We have, years ago, as you know, the incidental take permit, which allows beach driving on the 16 of the 47 miles of the beach, 16 of it of which is driving. You can take away beach driving from areas, but in order to put it back, it requires an act of Florida legislation. Remember that in 2030, this goes back in front of Fish and Wildlife to allow us the continuation of that incidental take permit. And my feeling is if we interrupt that in any way, we're just going to jeopardize that. So I'm not in favor of that as far as going back. The areas that I'm talking about extend from the Ormond by the Sea area to the area by Hard Rock to the area by Main Street. And I know there's a lot of people in the Main Street area in Daytona that wish that to be open. I'm not sure how that will help them, but nonetheless. And then, of course, down here in the beautiful town of Ponce Inlet. I'm not in favor of that, and I will not support that endeavor. So as far as I'm concerned, we have a great beach. We are significant on the East Coast because we have the only driving beach. So it gives us opportunity of the 16 miles for those individuals to enjoy that. However, let's not take away from what people have enjoyed if they don't want to go to a driving beach. They also have a dog beach down there. I'm not in support of one down here, but they have one up there on a trial basis, and we'll see how that works. I know that comes back up. That's fine that it's down there. We own dogs. I'm good with dogs. Obviously, I love dogs, but there's a place for that. So nonetheless, I hope if you have any questions, I'm open to it. Hopefully, I can answer them for you.
Thank you, Councilman. Are there any questions? Skip.
No, and again, Matt, thank you for the back gate. I think some of you that were here at the last council meeting, we discussed that. But the back gate, what Matt's talking about, is the very end of Peninsula. That would be past the lighthouse going into the back entrance of the park. There had been some discussion that as the Volusia County changes the way they collect their tolls, that potentially that back gate had an opportunity to be open. When we heard that as a council, we were pretty upset because I know we're here today discussing traffic flow, and I can't imagine what had happened if that back gate was open for additional visitors to come into the park through the south gate. So, Matt, thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. It is good news.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, thank you very,
thank you.
Very much, Councilman. We are so appreciative of you being here and of the update. Thank you. Item 7, our consent agenda. There is one item on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull this item? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Okay, now we are 8A, presentation of the town's financial statements and independent auditor's report for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2023, as prepared by BMC CPAs. Mike, if you could, would you like to introduce this item for us?
Yes, sure. So with the audit every year, first of all, let me say the audit, even though it's April now, the audit that is going to be presented is for last fiscal year ending September 30th of last year. And this is really just typically how long it takes to go back through all the transactions, everything that the town has done financially, and not just the transactions, but the procedures to authorize those transactions. Everything is what the auditors look for. And it takes us long to get to this point. And this is the cycle of what we do every year. This requires an extensive amount of work by our finance department. And then, of course, and that's working with our auditors hand in hand to get this done. But we're pleased to report that for yet another year, I believe this is the seventh or eighth year in a row, we have a perfect audit. No concerns have been identified. You have your report, my cover memo, and then, of course, the audit document itself, which was provided to the council a couple weeks ago. So with that, we have Kim McCall in our audience, and then I'm going to turn over to our auditors, Jack Haymore with BMC, and he's going to be presenting this through Zoom.
Okay. So thank you very much, Mike. Is this Mr. Haymore?
Yes.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you. I'll try to present everything as quickly as possible. I know that it's a very long document, so I think what I have prepared for you guys, share my screen here, is, if it'll come up, there it is.
While he's doing that, just so you know, he's based in North Carolina. That's why he's not here physically with us, so we're doing it this way.
Yeah, thank you guys for understanding about that. Here we go. Can you see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to be primarily presenting this PowerPoint, which is a summation of the annual financial report, which is what the council received several weeks ago. Just because, you know, that's like, I believe it was 110 pages or somewhere along there. So, you know, obviously we need something to, you know, summarize that. And this is probably the best way just to go through quickly. And once again, thank the town of Ponce Inlet for using us, and thank especially Kim McCall, who we worked with extensively. Just a very clean audit, like always. Everything was gotten to us, you know, right on time, and just very smooth sailing, just like in the past several years in which I've done it, done the audit. To start off with, we're just going to have a list of acronyms just to explain it so that when you see them either in the annual financial report or AFR or in this PowerPoint that you kind of know what we're talking about. The AFR stands for Annual Financial Report. This is the comprehensive report that includes the audit opinion and the basic financial statements and all the supplemental schedules. It's uploaded to the Department of Financial Services via a system called the Logger X. And then we also had to email and mail a version to what's called the Auditor General. So those are the two areas that require the audit where it ends up getting to. MD&A stands for Management Discussion and Analysis. It's a required portion of the financial statements, but it's not as, I guess, uniform as the notes are. You know, the financial statements and the notes, they have to be a cookie cutter, you know, exact way. But the management discussion analysis is something management can use to, one, have have comparative information between 1 year and the and previous years to kind of show what direction the town's going, and then to also explain what happened in the year, for financial trends and likewise. RSI stands for Required Supplementary Information. Those are required extra schedules from GAGAS, which is Generally Accepted Government Accounting or Auditing Standards. That it's just supplemental schedules for your pension, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Speaking of pension, FRS stands for Florida Retirement System. That's the primary pension in the state of Florida. HIS stands for Health Insurance Subsidy. That's a subset of the Florida Retirement System. It's like it's like a supplemental health insurance portion of your primary pension. I mentioned GAGAS a second ago, Generally Accepted Government Auditing Standards. Those are just the set of standards that we have to conduct our audit by, kind of the rule set. And then OPEB is Other Post-Employment Benefits. That's another type of health insurance subsidy that the town has. Very quickly, going over the overview of the AFR contents. We kind of discussed this a little bit a second ago with the list of acronyms, but we have a summary of the town officials, then our independent auditor's report, the MD&A, like we said, the basic financial statements, the RSI, as we talked about, then the last two, then we have the combining non-major fund statement and the budgetary comparison for each fund. Then we have the compliance section, which is the yellow book, which is the GAGAS report, and then the management letter and the independent accountant's report. Just supplemental reports, but the primary audit report is right here in the front. Very quickly, we conducted our audit in accordance with GAS and GAGAS, like we talked about, to get reasonable assurance that the financial statements aren't materially misstated. We didn't find anything in our audit that would prevent us from giving you an unmodified opinion. That's a clean opinion. So with whenever you look through the auditor's report, I know it's fairly long, two and a half pages, but just know that this is a standard report for a clean audit opinion. The only thing that there is some language in there about the required supplementary information and then your other supplementary information, and then also the fact that there is a component unit of the town, which is the Lighthouse Association. But just know that it was a clean audit opinion, just like you've had in the past, well, all the years since I've been doing it. All right, moving on to the balance sheet. The balance sheet, just for comparative information, is very summarized here, very much 30,000 feet view. You'll see that if you look on the change column, we don't have a ton of change between 1 year and the next. The single biggest increase was on your net pension and OPEB liability, which we'll talk about on the next slide. Essentially, very comparable balance sheet-wise from 2023 to 2022. No huge differences balance sheet-wise in either assets or liabilities or net assets to really take note of too much. Moving on to your pension information, that's what GASB 68 and 75 is. Just very quickly, this is just to explain that a lot, and we'll see a little bit more here a little bit later, a lot of the changes in your statement of activities, which is akin to an income statement, has to do with these pension numbers, which are actuarial numbers that we get directly from the Florida Retirement System. essentially what happens is we get a, one, we get, the Florida retirement system gets an audit every year, and we get those audited financial statements, and then we also receive a list of spreadsheets from the Florida retirement system that essentially tells us for the entire state of Florida, all municipalities and, you know, covered entities, what the pension liability is, pension expense, and pension outflows, pension inflows. And then they break it down to tell us the percentage that Town of Ponce Inlet has to use to allocate, you know, their percentage based on population. So it ends up being like we take that, all those figures for the pension liability and expense for the entire Florida retirement system, and then we take the town's percentage, which is always a very, very small percentage, just like 0.00004 something. And then that's how we get, you know, all the pension information that we have to include in the financial statements. You see your net pension liability, your pension expense, your deferred inflows and deferred outflows. And you can see we put 3 years here for comparative information, that depending on the actuarial calculations that they have, it can vary a lot between 1 year and 1 year and the next. Like 2021, it went from a net pension liability of, for the Town of Ponce Inlet, about 1.1 million to about 5.7 million in 2022. And all this is confirmed with the Florida retirement system and it's directly from them. So it's just, it's a bunch of actuarial, you know, figures that they come up with, that one, they're not really, when you see pension expense down here, and that's not necessarily the actual cash, you know, outlays that you guys have, you know, to pay for retirees and stuff. That's just an actuarial calculation, as well as the liabilities and deferred inflows and deferred outflows. So you're going to see, like, pension expense for this year was significant at 1.1 million compared to about 250,000 last year. But one, that's not necessarily indicative of your cash outlays. You know, they're similar between the years. And two, there's nothing that the town can do. It's just, you know, it's just the town's allocated percentage of the whole statewide, the statewide calculation. So just to, you know, just to draw your attention to that a little bit, since that is a pretty big area of the financial statements. Next, moving on to governmental fund revenues. Here's a pie graph that shows you the relevant percentages of revenues by source. You'll see that by and large, the largest area is property taxes at 61%. Charges for services is the next largest at 16%. Other taxes at 7%, and then everything else is rather smaller, but it's pretty comparable to prior years. You'll see that your governmental fund revenues decreased by about $435,000 in fiscal year 2023. And I have a small list of changes between fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 2023. By far the largest change was in fiscal year 2022. You guys recognized 100% of the ARPA grant, which was paid in two different about 800 or some odd thousand dollar increments. So it's $1.6 million recognized in fiscal year 2022. That obviously was a one-time thing and didn't repeat in fiscal year 2023. So that was by far the biggest decrease in revenues. But then you had a bunch of increases in revenues. You had FEMA from Hurricane Ian and a couple other agencies for about $270,000. There's also an insurance reimbursement for Some damages during Ian, that was about $240,000. Your investment earnings increased by about $200,000 due to, you know, a large increase in interest rates and things of that nature. And then you had a $175,000 increase in building permit revenues in fiscal year 23, and then also about a $100,000 increase in rentals for fiscal year 2023. So all in all, a decrease of about $435,000 for between those 2 years. Next, moving on to governmental fund expenses. This is another pie graph that shows expenses by function. You can see that over half of all governmental fund expenses is for public safety, and then 19% for general government, 11% for transportation and public works, 7% for cultural recreation, 7% for information technology, and then 1% for interest on your debt. And then once again, we have a line or a graph that shows the total change in governmental fund expenses. Your expenses are up $1.8 million, but that is to say that about $800,000 of that increase is due to the pension expense, which we talked about a little bit earlier. That expense is an actuarial calculation. It's not actual, you know, an actual $800,000 increase in cash going out the door. So about half of that increase is just a actuarial calculation valuation. It's not, you know, actual cash. So that $800,000 increase in pension expense makes up for about half of it. And then you had about $241,000 more dollars in various capital projects. And then for Hurricane Ian cleanup, there was about $313,000 for that. And between those three things, that makes up the majority of your increase in governmental fund expenses between the years. Next, we'll talk about your unreserved fund equity and number of days. This is saying that if you didn't it's just a kind of reserve analysis to say, you know, if you didn't receive any more money in, obviously never going to happen. But, you know, if you didn't, then you can survive on the equity that you have for about 193 days or about half a year. And you can see that in the last 3 years, it's been going down fairly quickly. But from 245 days in 2021, fiscal year 21, all the way down to 193 days in fiscal year 2023. And this is an area that might be of, you might consider pretty important for you guys, because it's a pretty critical ratio that the state looks at to see, you know, your liquidity and, you know, what kind of financial standing you're in. So it had increased from 179 days in 2019 to 245 in 2021, but now it's fallen back down to almost 2019 levels. So it might be, you know, a good idea to use this to try to build up some more reserves, if possible. Now into the business activities. Everything up to now has been governmental activities, which is to say, you know, not enterprise funds. Enterprise funds are things such as water, sewer, and refuse that you charge a fee for the service. Here's the business activities. You can see that your change in net position for the year for your water fund was a loss of $234,000. That loss is about double what the loss was in 2022. In 2022, you had a loss of $121,000, which is about an 8% loss compared to operating revenues. And then in fiscal year 23, you had a $234,000 loss, which is about a 14% loss as compared to operating revenues. I won't touch on the sewer and the refuse as much, because those mostly break even, especially the sewer, since it's a pass-through. But the water system losses, I believe, is kind of what drove the council to determine to increase their water rates for starting in, and I believe it was October of 2023. Just those continued losses obviously necessitated an increase in the waters and the water rates. All right, then the last three tabs are slides are just for, you know, kind of a little bit of additional information on your property tax rates. You can see in 2022, you had, and sorry, I'm having to lean in to see it, 5.3 rate, and then it increased in 2023, it looks like, to 6.2779. And then we have the property rates, property tax rates compared to other, you know, entities of, you know, of about you. Kind of comparable size, you know, in the, you know, locally. You can see that you guys are about, you know, are about half what, or about the average. You know, there's two that are higher than you guys, and there's three that are lower than you guys. So you're right there in the middle at 6.2779. And then the last is just a show, it's just a graph to show how property tax rates, or how property tax values, rather, have been increasing a lot in the last 3 years. You can see it went from 1312 all the way up to 1834, and this is in millions. You know, so the property tax base value is increasing a whole lot. Other than that, that concludes the presentation that I had. That I have prepared for the AFR, and just like I said, it was really great working with Kim and her team, and Mike as well, and you guys have always taken financial responsibility very seriously, and it obviously shows when we come in and do the audit. Always have our questions answered very promptly. Everything is... All your answers make sense and are, you know, obviously thought out, and it's just a breath of fresh air to, you know, come into, you know, to a town that obviously takes this kind of stuff very seriously. So I just want to thank you guys, and does anybody have any questions or any comments, anything that, you know, I can help you out with?
Yeah, Mr. Haymore, first, I want to echo what you said. I could tell it's a very understandable piece of work, and I know that our team here has worked very, very hard, and it's a professional finished product. So thank you very much for that, and I appreciate the presentation as well. I will ask our council now if anyone has any questions for you.
I do.
Oh, okay. Councilman Milano has a question for you.
Jack, one quick question.
Sure.
I can ask you questions about the money that's going to be, we're going to get in 2026 after our loans are paid off, and go through that whole process. But my one biggest question that I have is the FRF system, Florida Retirement System.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
You noted as it being a solid system because we're at 82%, and the average is considered great at 80%. I've been around Florida a long time. The FRS system in 2007, before the 2008, before the crash, was the second best funded retirement system in the entire United States. Do you know what level we are today? Because we had a group of people that made decisions that changed some of the things that were happening in the system. What I'm trying to find out, is it still at number two? Has it dropped down? And those changes over the last 10 years, have they had the significant effect that why we are $900,000 below what we're supposed to be putting in? I mean, that's significant.
Right. I'm sorry. I don't know right off the top of my head what changes have been made in the past 10 years. And, you know, and to answer to your questions, if you want to email me, I'd be happy to look into it for you, and, you know, and see if I can find the information that you're looking for.
Thank you. That's all I can ask for. It just bothers me to show that we're so far below when it used to be such a great funded system. But right. Thank you. If you can find it, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, just email me your question if you don't mind, and you know I'll be happy to look into it for you. Because yeah, the I really have to take their numbers kind of, you know, as a word of faith, you know, because all this actuarial stuff, you know, is kind of, you know, it kind of goes over my head a little bit. So I just make sure I use their numbers and understand, you know, kind of the way we're supposed to allocate it. But, you know, yeah. All the stuff, you know, that goes into their calculation of, you know, deferred outflows, deferred inflows, and, you know, net pension liability and stuff. We just kind of, you know, rely on them and their audit, you know, for that. So
I was just curious because I remember years and years ago the position was an elected position, and then mm-hmm. over time it became an appointed position, which I think it is still currently. Am I correct? The person in charge of the FRS?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you.
I was just curious because I just noticed that in 903,000. And I was just curious because I remember it was such a well-funded system. And I know I see that we're still above the average, but we were number two in the state of Florida. So I'm just curious. When you have a chance, no rush.
Thank you, Councilman. Anyone else? And I will open up to the public if you have any questions. I do want to let you know that we, as the council members, have had the staff report. We've had the reports. We've had the PowerPoint for quite a few weeks and the opportunity to really go in depth and ask our questions at that time. And I know this may be the first time for all of you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to ask a question of either Mr. Haymore or perhaps somebody within our town staff in the finance department? Okay. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to accept the town's financial statements and an independent auditor's report for fiscal year ending September 30th, 2023, as prepared by BMC CPAs.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Mr. Haymore, thank you very, very much for your work, and I also want to thank Kim McCall, and your entire team, everyone in our finance department. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Haymore.
Bravo. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And we will move now to 8B, and that is Ordinance 2024-02, first reading, granting a non-exclusive electric utility franchise to Florida Powered and Light. Cliff, would you please read the ordinance by title only?
Ordinance 2024-02, read by title only, an ordinance of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, granting to Florida Power and Light Company, its successors and assigns, a non-exclusive electric utility franchise, imposing provisions and conditions relating thereto, providing for monthly payments to the Town of Ponce Inlet, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you very much. Mike?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, this is the ordinance that grants FPL a 30-year franchise agreement with the town. The last time we've gone through this together was 1994, and it expires this year. So what these agreements do, it gives FPL the right to deliver and sell electric power to the town. In exchange, the FPL passes along to the town 6% that's collected from those utility bills. The agreement is intended to provide a number of things, such as what happens if there are accidents, what happens if traffic is obstructed, a whole range of things that are covered in here. So we've been working with FPL staff over the past really about 6 months of discussions going back and forth to try to finalize the content of the agreement. It's really focused on this franchise provision. There's not a lot of extra stuff in there. But what it does cover, some things that we've been able to cover is, again, making sure that the work by FPL doesn't interfere with traffic, whether that's vehicular or non-vehicular, adherence to DOT standards with any kind of construction in the right-of-way, the town's right to remove any kind of facilities or equipment that does interfere with traffic, and then the right to a higher franchise fee if there's a higher franchise fee in a neighboring jurisdiction. And then likewise, FPL gets the same benefit if they find another jurisdiction that has a greater benefit than what we're providing here. Also, some things that are included are, you know, the right to have a face-to-face meeting if any kind of discussion. You know, there's provisions also for termination of the agreement. We're able to secure a greater length of time to negotiate if there's any kind of issues with that. These are things that we don't expect to have happen, but they are nonetheless covered as part of this ordinance. Now, things that it doesn't include would be extra things or kind of related, but such as tree trimming. That's actually covered by state law, actually, the kind of notice that has to be provided. Things like undergrounding, you know, we've had some of these discussions with them, but they are not really part of this franchise agreement per se. So with that, we are satisfied with the ordinance as it is and presented. You also have a copy with you of the last ordinance that was done in 1994. You'll find that to be very similar to this one. With that, I can answer any questions, and I know representatives from FPL are here as well.
Well, Mike, first of all, I want to thank you because I know that this was quite the negotiated document back and forth, and if I understand, it's non-exclusive with conditions, and it seems to me to be fair in terms of the agreement itself and reasonable. I, at this time, do not have any questions. Does anyone have any questions here? Are we all? No questions. Does anyone in the audience have any questions? Yes, Mr. Burge.
Excuse me. Charles Burge, 4670 Lynx Village Drive, Unit B702. My question is not just about FPL. It's about all the utility companies that come here. Who's responsible for when they break the concrete when they park their trucks on the road? I noticed the trucks park. 2 days later, the concrete's all broken. And is that our cost, or do they cover that?
No, that is their cost.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion for first reading.
I guess it's my turn.
Yes,
I make a motion to approve the proposed ordinance 2020-402, grant non-exclusive electric utility franchise to Florida Power and Light Company.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Smith?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. And I want to thank our representatives from Florida Power and Light for coming. Thank you so much. We appreciate your efforts in this. Mike, thank you, and Cliff. And now we are going to move on to item number 9, which is our public hearing quasi-judicial matter. This is the review of the final site development plan for Sailfish Marina, 4912 Sailfish Drive. So, now this is a quasi-judicial hearing, and as such, the council members sit as the trier of fact. I would ask our attorney to provide us with a recap of what we can expect in the proceedings, what's expected of the participants, and our role as the trier of fact. Cliff?
Yes, Mayor. The first thing, obviously, we'll cover, as you all are familiar with, is the need to disclose ex parte communications. Ex parte communications are those communications which take place outside of this proceeding and can be with anyone regarding any side of this issue, even neutral folks. And they are provided so that all sides, the developer, the town, and anybody who's interested, knows what you may have learned or found out in places that aren't this hearing. This differs from a regular judicial proceeding where everything must take place in court in the open public because it's quasi-judicial and it's based on the nature of the way government operates. So in order to level the playing field so everybody knows what has been learned by everyone so that they can question it or learn more about it, that's the reason for the disclosure. So at some point prior to the vote, I would recommend soon, you will disclose those communications. Any communications that were received in writing, such as emails and such, if they haven't already been